Welcome into a brand new episode of the Believe in Royals podcast. I'm Alex Fuse. There's Jeremy Danner. We have a lot to talk about today. The All-Star break wrapping up. Games are back in action, hopefully. Last night's Yankee Red Sox game got postponed due to COVID issues, so hopefully we have a full slate of baseball games on today. But first, the Royals had Whit Merrifield and Salvador Perez showcase in the All-Star game this past week. What was your first reaction, Jeremy, to Salvador Perez's incredible performance in that home run derby?
I mean, my first reaction before he got up to hit was, oh, Lord, what is going to happen? Pete Alonso murdered it. But then when Salvi got up there, I think he got off to a bit of a slow start. After his timeout, he came back and really started crushing, and I was amazed. He looked like a slugger up there, you know, and I think if you look at the history of our team, you know, apart from guys like Moose and Jorge Soler, you know, standing out with being sluggers, we're really not a team that has sluggers. And you look at a guy like Pete Alonso, he's a big boy. He's huge. He looks like he's up there to mash the ball. And Salvador Perez held his own against him. I mean, 35 home runs in the first round is incredible. 28 is incredible. Most ever by a catcher in home run derby history. Granted, the rules have changed over time, you know, as far as how much time they get to hit and how it works. But I loved it, man. And I thought he did an amazing job on a national scale. And even though he didn't make it out of the first round, I think we should all be super proud of the way he performed. And I hope he's excited and proud.
Now, I got a question for you. A lot of heat on social media about the home run derby and the coverage of Salvador Perez when he was at bat. I was watching the regular version of ESPN. Our friend Joel Goldberg was watching the StatCast version of the home run derby, to where they did talk a lot about Salvador Perez. And I think you would have missed something if you didn't think Salvador Perez was at the plate and at bat during the home run derby. So did you realize, or did you feel like Salvador Perez on the regular broadcast, I don't know which one you watch, but did you feel like Salvador Perez got like kind of blacklisted in a way from the home run derby?
You know, I watched the regular broadcast, and I know that it's like, it feels like so Kansas City and such a Royals fan thing to do, to feel like, oh, once again, the media has not paid attention to us. Everyone loves to whine about Joe Buck in the 2014 World Series. And if I were calling that game and Madison Bumgarner were doing what he did in Game 7, that's all I would be talking about too. So like, I get that, but I do feel like during the broadcast, they did him a bit of a disservice. It was all split screen with a lot of Pete Alonso interviewing him over Salvador Perez's home run derby performance. Yeah, so I was a little bummed about that.
All right, I'm just making sure, because I know you're gonna give your honest opinion when it comes to that. So being in Kansas City, I'm in Texas still, so I don't really understand the true pulse of the people in Kansas. But I did see a lot of tweets, some vocal tweets about how ESPN did Salvador Perez wrong. So I'm just seeing, you know, what your take was.
Yeah, I mean, when he started out kind of slow, it's like, okay, there's an interview going on in the background. But then when things picked up and it just stayed on Pete Alonso, I felt like it would have been the right thing to do to switch over and actually cover what he was doing. Because he mashed some balls. He had 16 home runs over 450 feet out of 28. His longest was just shy of 500 feet. So I do think they did him a bit of a disservice. I didn't tweet about it because I didn't want to be called out for being a whiny Royals fan, or, you know, being a homer who hates on the national broadcast. I should have watched the StatCast. I didn't know that was a thing. Was it? It was the same video feed, but a different audio. Is that what it was?
Right. It was Jason Benetti, and I forget who else doing the broadcast. And Jason Benetti is one of the best voice of the White Sox on TV. So he was doing that broadcast. But I believe they were live at the ballpark, I believe. So,
I think they were broadcasting
from the stadium.
I'll have to go back and look at MLB, look at the MLB TV app and see if I can watch that. At the same time, though, like everyone who looked at it afterwards, and you know, there are a lot of people who don't watch the home run derby. There are a lot of people who don't watch the All-Star game. They just look at the coverage afterwards. So I think if you look at what he did afterwards, it's still impressive, but then you have to think about, there were other home run hitters who had as many home runs as he did, but they had extra rounds to accomplish that in. Mm-hmm. So if you just look at it from the recap perspective, it doesn't look like he hit, in my mind, he had the second most home runs in the first round, because the other players had extra time to get where they got. But I just think it was a bad luck of the draw being against Pete Alonso. But that dude was locked in the entire time.
Incredible. You know, and I kind of not laughed, but when he celebrated after he won and he said he was the best power hitter in the game of baseball, that night he was. I don't know whether or not he's the best power hitter in the sport, but that night he was the best power hitter we've seen in a lot of years.
I mean, he was definitely the best power hitter off of balls not thrown over 70 miles an hour, for sure.
Right.
But having said that, I can't jack one 490 feet off a pitch like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's impressive. I thought the entire night was really exciting for baseball, everything leading up with having, you know, Shohei Ohtani in there. Even if he didn't make it out of the first round, that was still cool to watch too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Let's get back to the regular season. As we enter in the second half of the season, the Kansas City Royals are in last place. They have a record of 36-53. And they open up the second half with a three-game set against the Baltimore Orioles, who are also struggling this season. Obviously, I think it's going to be tough for the Royals to kind of fight back, but anything can happen in baseball, that's for sure. So what do you expect from the Royals in the second half of the season?
You know, I say this all the time, that I trust that everyone who works with the Royals in baseball operations knows more about baseball operations than I do. But as a fan who doesn't waver, I would like to see some more accountability as we open the second half. And that's not saying I want to see guys thrown under the bus, but I want to see if we're going to make moves at the deadline, if we're going to trade people, let's trade people, you know, let's build for the future. But I do want to see the lineup reflect performance more. Nicky Lopez, you could make the argument that he could move up in the lineup. I do like him in the nine spot because it's exciting to have him there, you know, setting the table for Witt as the order comes back around. But I think he's a guy you could move up. I'm curious and excited to see what's going to happen with Bobby Witt Jr. A lot of folks are saying that he's probably going to start, you know, playing at the AAA level soon. So that would be exciting to see that. And then I'd like to see, and this is, you know, this is me being irritating probably, but I'd like to see Matheny go back to experimenting more with what he was doing with pitchers' roles in the bullpen. You know, I think it started out the season, we saw a lot of, not necessarily inning-based decisions, but situation and the way guys were performing. And see more of that mixed up, I think, would be interesting.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the trade deadline coming up and potential trade moves. Danny Duffy in the news of potentially moving around. He did tweet, though, that he wants to be buried a Royal. And the interesting thing about Danny Duffy, though, is he can veto any trade. So right. If, let's say he gets traded to the Padres, for example, well, he can say, I don't want to go. And he can stay in Kansas City because of the 5-10 rule. So I think it's going to be interesting to see what Kansas City does at the deadline. The question would be, what about Whit Merrifield? Does he have a long future in Kansas City? And I think if you ask a Royals fan, you want to see Whit Merrifield, but is it best for the long-term future when you have prospects in the minor leagues that can perform at the level, I don't know about the Whit Merrifield level, but still perform at a level to where we can trade away Whit Merrifield and be in a better off spot. Some Padre fans obviously are vocal on Twitter when it comes to the deadline as well, and I want your opinion on this. They were calling for a Salvador Perez trade.
What?
So, yeah. So there was a lot of rumors around that. Not rumors in front offices, but the fans that they want Salvador Perez, the Padres do. So out of this Royals team, is it fair to say that no one is untouchable? Or are there players on this team that are considered untouchable?
Man, I mean you know, speaking as strictly a fan and my romantic thoughts about baseball and my personal feelings, I would be gutted to see Salvador Perez or Whit Merrifield traded away. I feel the same about Danny Duffy, but I know that this is our last year of team control for him. Contract years are undefeated, as we know. But I could also see him going there to finish out the season as a rental and then signing with the Royals again next year. But yeah, I think, it would be wild to trade away Salvador Perez. He's the leader of our team, you know, on the field, in the clubhouse. And if you ask the fans, you know, who's the Royal star player, it's Salvador Perez. And Whit Merrifield is right behind that. And people here in Kansas City love Whit Merrifield. And I think they'd be really bummed to see him go. At the same time, though, as a guy who is not only a fan of the Royals, but a fan of these dudes as individuals, I would love for Whit Merrifield to get a World Series championship. He deserves it. I think it's too bad that he wasn't on the team, wasn't called up in 2014 and 2015. So yeah, I mean, I would be very excited for him to get traded to a winner and have that chance to make a run and, you know, get showcased on the national scale. Can you imagine how much fun it would be to watch? I mean, I'd much rather watch Whit Merrifield play in the World Series for the Royals every time, 100 times out of 100. But to watch him, you know, perform and crush it for another team in the World Series would be cool. But I sincerely hope that we don't trade him away.
It's just, I agree. And it's almost kind of growing on me, the idea of potentially trading Whit Merrifield away, because you look at the way Nicky Lopez is playing, you could easily just move him over to second. And when Bobby Witt Jr. gets called up, you can place him at short. But then you can also make the argument to where you could put Whit Merrifield in the outfield in that situation. So I think it's so difficult, and it must be so difficult for the Royals front office to say, okay, like right now, being in last place in the division, you can obviously say that they can make a move, right? Or they should make a move in that situation to get another prospect or another, you know, starter reliever to fill into that bullpen area. But you look at how they played in, you know, the first half of the season way back in April and May, to where they did have the best record in baseball, to where it seemed like the Royals were so close to being back, to where Whit Merrifield can be more valuable than a starter or reliever, because they have their starting pitching depth once they get matriculated into the system and build up their arsenal to a major league level. So I don't know. I don't know if the Royals should trade Whit Merrifield or not, because what's the best situation? Like, I honestly don't know. Obviously, we can't predict to the future, but still, it's certainly something to where it kind of, you think it's like, man, is it better to keep him or better get rid of him?
I mean, you make a great point as far as the middle infield goes. We do have a glut of folks coming up in the future, hopefully. And then there's still always the question of Adalberto Mondesi. Right. Does he have the ability to stay healthy in the long term? And Whit can be moved around. I think if I were in charge of the team, a guy that I would be looking to trade away for potential pieces down the road is Scott Marlowe. This is his last season under team control. He's eligible for arbitration next year, and he's great. I would be sad to see him leave. Here's the deal about, you know, coming up on the trade deadline is when a team becomes sellers, that's the writing's on the wall. And folks could argue that the writing's been on the wall for a while now with the records and the standings. How many games back are we? We're 18 games back out of first place. That's not easy to come back from.
No.
I think it's much easier to end up where we are from where we started than it is to return to where we started from where we are right now. And we said this time and time again, that I don't think that the April team was the Royals, and I don't think the past couple months was the Royals, but I hope we find out who are the Royals this year, you know, over the next couple of weeks of baseball. We have, was it like 45 days with 41 games? So they are getting back into it hard too.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if they play consistent baseball, which is something we haven't seen in the first half of the season, you know, when I read an interesting article on The Athletic with owner Joel Sherman, and you know, I think it was Alec Lewis asking the questions to him about, you know, what have your thoughts been about this Royals team, and what do you see? Like, is this still the future? And kind of just an update on his process, mind process with everything. And he says, number one, obviously, I said back in December that we're going to find out who this Royals team midsummer. And he was saying how obviously the expectation didn't live up to where they wanted to go. But you look at a guy like Carlos Santana, and you don't look at the numbers, but you can kind of see he's living up to the numbers on his baseball card, right? Playing a very reliable first baseman with some power. He's had a few memorable moments, walk-off moments this season. Salvador Perez, if you mentioned Jeremy earlier on this episode, that he's the face of the team. Like, he's that clubhouse leader. You look at guys like Whit Merrifield, who is, again, starting every single day, even though he's banged up or struggling at the plate. He's still in there every single day, not taking an off day. So he's a consistent piece in that lineup. And guys like Nicky Lopez, who has struggled this season, but man, has he been playing incredibly well over the last few weeks and months. So I think, and he also talked about the bullpen, how the bullpen in the beginning of the season was sharp and consistent, but then when the starting rotation got away from them for a few weeks, the bullpen was relied on too much. So I think, obviously, you can look at both sides of it. The offense has struggled, but so has the starting pitching that then relies more on the bullpen. So it seems like we are so close to being there, but yet at some times it seems like we're so far away in a sense. So I think the Royals are in a right spot. They just got to, honestly, I think they just got to figure themselves out. I think they got the team. They just got to figure themselves out.
You know that kid's story, is it Alexander and the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day? Yeah. Where just everything goes wrong. That's what it feels like when things are not going well, everything's going poorly. And it's amazing that we haven't had any major personnel changes. You know, nothing major has happened from the start of the season to where we are now. So it's the same group of guys that had that best record in baseball who now have the worst record in the Central. And it's just confusing. And I've seen, you know, friends that I've talked to are online, they're calling for, you know, managers and coaches to get fired. And I know that changes can you know, spur some improvement. But really, if things are where they are right now, I don't really want to throw the team into more disarray than it is right now. And maybe this is stupid of me, but I'm optimistic that after a break and after some time to sit and chill and, you know, clear their minds, I'm excited to see them, you know, start back at home tonight. I'm going to take my son out to the game and check it out. And we're going to cheer our guts out for Salvi when he comes up for his first at bat, because I mean, we have so much to be proud of him with the way he performed this weekend. And then I just think it's cool to see how much other people in the league love Salvador Perez and love Whit Merrifield. I think something I didn't mention earlier when we were talking about, you know, Whit being on the All-Star team is he was voted in by the players again. And I know that means a lot to those guys to have their peers select them.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's not a respect to Whit Merrifield. I mean, obviously, I always ask this to people that are a casual baseball fan that don't know too much about the Kansas City Royals. I always ask them, who leads the league in hits since 2017? And it's Whit Merrifield. And to a casual baseball fan that knows who Whit Merrifield is, I think that they would be surprised by that. You know, the fans at Mookie or Mike Trout or Aaron Judge, those type of, obviously Tatis is not, but right. Still. Just the idea that Whit Merrifield leads the league in hits since 2017, it kind of makes you question, okay, you know, why is this guy not talked about more? You know, and maybe he will be if he does get traded. You know, maybe that's what needs to happen for him to become a true member in the game of baseball to the casual fans. And we can sit here and talk about all day about the marketing issues and all that stuff in baseball. But let's not do that. You know, I think I think baseball is doing a lot better. They are improving in that category. So I think that baseball is on the right track. I honestly do. And I think that the future of the game is strong if they stay the path they're on and being able to learn and improve as the seasons go along. So Whit Merrifield, like you said, voted in by the players, which is just an incredible honor to have, especially if you're Whit.
I think it's amazing. You know, it's fun to see people around the baseball world know and realize what we've known about Whit Merrifield for the past couple of years. You know, it's a shame he didn't get more opportunities at the plate. He just had one plate appearance, and he got struck out on a nasty breaking ball, and he knew it, you know, walking away. I think he said, damn it, you know, and you could see that he was frustrated, but it was a great pitch that he got struck out on. But yeah, it's interesting being a small market town and not getting the media coverage and fanfare that we get to see what people do think about the team. I'm not going to mention the Twitter handle that tweeted it out because I don't want to give them any more recognition than they obviously don't deserve. But there's a Twitter handle that tweeted out the most overrated players in MLB this morning. And do you know who they picked for the Royals?
Who?
Nicky Lopez.
Overrated?
Overrated. And I want to know, no disrespect to Nicky, but who in baseball right now, outside of Kansas City or the Midwest, who's talking about Nicky Lopez that he's overrated? And even if they were talking about him, you know, saying how great he is, they'd be right now. Like, dude is doing everything you want from a number nine hitter. I was shocked when I read that list. There were a lot of superstars on there. And then Nicky Lopez for the Royals. Like, how do you pick, you know, are you trolling us or what's going on here, man?
Right. I mean, like, you could sit down and say, okay, well, those guys might be a little overrated in a sense to where, you know, we give them a little too much hype. But Nicky Lopez, come on.
Yeah, dude is getting zero hype, you know, outside of Royals fans. So I was just really shocked to see that. And I'm like, man, this is like when NFL reporters, you know, say like the most overrated quarterback is Patrick Mahomes. And you're like, you're just looking for the rage clicks here. Yeah. That's why I'm not going to say your name. I'm not going to give you any more attention than you deserve. But I'm going to mention that was total hooey, dude.
Well, just shocked to see that. Random person on the internet. How dare you say Nicky Lopez is overrated?
I hope you're listening, buddy.
Yeah. Oh, they probably are. Well, they probably right. are. They probably love Nicky Lopez. They just wanted to get, you know, Jeremy Danner to talk about it on the Royals podcast.
Yeah, that's I've made
but jokes on them. You're not giving them the shout out. So. Awesome. Anything else we want to touch on this great Friday? Well, I guess it's not Royals news, but Jeff Passan tweeted out that as of now, the Yankees and Red Sox are expected to play today after six COVID-19 positives waylaid New York on Thursday. They did say, or Jeff did add, that there is optimism, and that optimism, as is the case with all the COVID outbreaks, is cautious. All six of the Yankee cases have now been confirmed, which means Gio Urshela, Kyle Higashioka, Jonathan Loaisiga, Nestor Cortes Jr., Wandy Peralta, and Aaron Judge will all go on the COVID IL. So the most notable piece of that news that I think kind of intricates in baseball news is Aaron Judge was at the All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
And there were, I mean, you saw it. The players were close contact the 2 days. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens today. And because, you know, the players went away for 4 days and then they came back. So I don't know what to expect from today in baseball. Yesterday was a weird day, that's for sure. Wiz Khalifa tested positive.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Wiz Khalifa tested positive. Rich Eisen had the vaccine or got the vaccine, tested positive for COVID, and had symptoms of it. And And then you look at last night's Yankee Red Sox game, even though the Yankees are at the 85% threshold of the vaccine. The game got postponed, and then the city of Los Angeles remandated their mask mandate. So a weird day yesterday. It's like you watch the All-Star game and the Home Run Derby, and you see the thousands of people there, no players wearing masks. It seems like things are back to normal. And then the next day, it's like, no, like, we're still here. So I was watching the Michael Kay show yesterday, and obviously, they do a great job. And Michael Kay asked, a question where, did we start too soon? You know, and I think that can be something like, did we start too soon? Like, is it over or did we just get tired of it? You know, and it's a fair question. Honestly, it's a fair question. I'm over it, but is it right to be over it? You know what I mean? So, it's a tough question. I don't think we have the answers. I really don't.
So no, it's tricky, man. If you look at what's happening in the state of Missouri right now with COVID cases surging in rural areas, and not to be a downer, but you know, so many times I'll be out, you know, and this is not baseball related, I'll be out doing my job selling beer, and we'll catch ourselves saying, you know, during the pandemic, like we're out of it. And the reality is we're not out of it. And I think it is wild. Everything that happened this week, you know, the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game, I feel like a kid watching those. And it's like baseball Disneyland, and mm-hmm. nothing can go wrong. And, you know, even if a guy strikes out during the game, at least he got to hit during the All-Star Game. You know, like, sure, you want to win every game you play as a baseball player, but it's fun to watch those guys be kids again. Mm-hmm. And they're, who are they talking to? Is it Chris Bryant they were talking to, who was playing right field? Mm-hmm. And he was saying, you know, like, I've been playing so many positions this year, it's like being a kid. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. And then to come crashing back down and realize COVID-19 is still impacting Major League Baseball rosters at this point. It's really wild to me, man.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't want to be a Debbie Downer on the podcast, but it's something we got to talk about, you know, and to make note that it's still here, you know, and Don LaGreca, I don't know if you've ever seen the Michael Kay show being in Kansas City, but Don LaGreca, who broadcast for the Rangers, New York Rangers, the hockey team, where he goes, you know, what's the end game here? You know, if the teams are vaccinated, and he said basically the postponements of the game are protecting those who aren't vaccinated, basically, right? He said that if teams aren't 100% vaccinated, that this is still going to be a thing. So is it just going to become a rain delay? You know what I mean? To where, or a rain cancellation, where it's like, is the game going to be played? Well, I don't know. You know, you said that you're going to the game tonight. Well, if something happens, you know, then I think it was a lot easier last year dealing with this stuff when there were no fans. Sure. And now the Yankee fans or Red Sox fans that were going to the game last night, they still haven't put anything out about when the game's going to be made up or what's going to happen to their tickets. So it's so difficult. And it's Yankees, Red Sox. Definitely not the scenario Major League Baseball wanted last night. The only game being played, Yankee Red Sox, right after a really fun home run derby and all-star game. And it's like that reminder that still here, you know? So it's like, man, like you kind of wish it didn't happen just because it reminds you of what it was last year. But it's also that reminder that it's still here in a way.
It is weird to think about, you know, and I wonder what the percentage of vaccinated fans to vaccinated players would break down to be, but you know, like fans are ready. We're happy to be back. I'm fully vaccinated. I feel good about being at the K. But then you realize that there are, you know, team officials, players, front office folks who may not be vaccinated, and that's their personal choice. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm not going to bag on them for that. We all do what we do, but it is wild to have this juxtaposition of like full stands, fans ready to go, super excited. Meanwhile, the product on the field is not ready to go. I don't watch football, but I saw people talking about, you know, the NFL season as it comes up. If teams have players that test positive and they're unable to play or they're unable to hold the game, should teams have to forfeit that? You know, if it's your job as an athlete to come to the stadium ready to play, and if you're unable to perform, at what point does, and you said this earlier, at what point does it become the folks who are unvaccinated? Does it become their responsibility, or does it become, you know, this is on them? And it's tricky, man. I mean, it's personal medical decisions are just that, they're personal, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously I don't ever want to see, I don't think I want to see where they mandate it. You know what I mean? To where you have to get it to play in Major League Baseball. Because I just don't see that being like, one, I don't think the union would go for it, because the union's job is to protect everyone. So even if you have 90% of the players saying, no, we want, but that 10%, the union has to protect that 10%. So I don't think it's ever going to get to that. But it's an interesting conversation. And I think, you know how we can't talk about this now because it's done with, but remember in high school or college, you would always have that argument, should college athletes be paid? And we can't talk about that anymore because now they can't be. So in like 20 years, I think there's going to be an essay, maybe now, should athletes be required to get the COVID vaccine? You know, that's the essay topic, you know, and now the argument to, it's so interesting to where we come out of this, or we're coming out of this pandemic. and it's like, we look back at this time, like 20 years from now, and we're going to analyze it. You know, where did we go right? Where did we go wrong? There's going to be a lot for both sides, I think. So it's going to be really interesting to see and look back on, okay, this is what we should have done. This is what we need to improve on and what we should have done. So I think it's so interesting to me to see, like, you take a step out and look down to where it's going to be in 5 years from now.
Yeah, I mean, I can remember, I haven't seen these shirts in a long time, but they used to, like, in high school or in college, you know, you'd wear the shirt that says property of Lexington High School, you know? And it's funny because I think some fans think of players that way and athletes that way, especially when you talk about the product on the field. But these aren't product, you know, these aren't property. You know, this is people we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So it is complicated, but at one point, does it become, you know, incumbent upon the team or upon the player to make sure that player is ready to perform? You know, if I were a Major League Baseball player and I showed up to camp 100 pounds overweight, I'm going to hear about it. And that's as a result of choices I made regarding my personal physical health, my condition, and my diet. But yeah, it's such a tricky gray area, man.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot to talk about for sure on this Friday episode of the Believe in Royals podcast. The Royals open up the second half of the season with a 3-game set with the Baltimore Orioles, the last place Baltimore Orioles in the American League East. So maybe the Royals can get something going to get off to a hot start in the second half of the season. Any other final comments, Jeremy, that you really want to make note to the amazing fans and listeners of this podcast?
You know, I'm just so excited to see Salvi and Witt return to the K this weekend. I hope that people go out and support them and support these guys. Yeah, we're in last place, but we're, like you said, we're also playing another last place team. So these are games we can and should win to get things going again. Obviously, the second half of the season is not a restart, but mentally it can be. And, you know, it's not as optimistic as opening day is where everybody's in first place. But I do have a lot of optimism going into that. And I think it's incumbent upon us as Royals fans. You know, we always want to say if the team's not doing well, we don't want to give them our money to go support them. But that's counterintuitive because the team needs our money and they need our support to do well. And you've heard guys talk about how much more it means to them to have fans in the stands this season as opposed to last. And I just think it's time for fans to show up again, man, and do what we can to support our team.
I think even if the Royals don't make the playoffs, Jeremy, there's still so much excitement about this team to where that even if they struggle in the second half or even if we see some light in the second half for the Royals, there's still so much excitement. And I think we're going to see that. That's my prediction, that we're going to see the future of the Royals in the second half of the season. So it's going to be fun and exciting to watch. I can't wait.
Let me ask you one more thing before we finish up. Before the season started, you tweeted that you think the Royals will be the second wild card. How confident are you in that prediction now?
Well, obviously, they're about 14 and a half games out of the second wild card spot. So not exactly ideal if you're the Kansas City Royals. But you look at their upcoming schedule. I'll pull it up just to make a point here. I mean, they got 3 games against Baltimore. And then you look at, okay, it depends what they do about the deadline. But then they got 2 games in Milwaukee, which is going to be a tough 2-game set. But then they got 3 games against Detroit, and then 4 games against the Chicago White Sox. And then they got 3 games against the Blue Jays, and then they have the White Sox, Cardinals, Yankees, Cardinals, Astros, Cubs,
Astros. These are all good teams, dude. Yeah.
All good teams. So August is going to be a very difficult month for the Royals. But it could also be a huge month. Like, who's to say that they can't play the way they did in April? You know what I mean? So if they go on a 10-game winning streak, well, now they're almost back to 500. So you look at the Angels. They have over $80 million on the IL. They have $30 million playing across the city. And the Angels are just one game over 500. And they haven't had a healthy team for more than like 10 games this whole season. So the Angels were like 10 games or 6 or 7 games below 500 just a few weeks ago. And now they're like 5 games out of the wild card spot. So obviously I'm going to be realistic here and to say like I'm not 100% confident that the Royals are going to be that second wild card team. But in baseball, I'm not going to sit here and tell you the Royals aren't making the playoffs because there's always that slim chance in baseball to where you just can't predict it. And I'm not going to sit here and to say a hot take and then be roasted in 3 months from now when my gut was right the first time. So
right. Don't get roasted, bro. Don't do it.
Yeah. It doesn't bother me anyways. I don't want to sleep over it, but if I went with, I'm going to stick with it, you know?
Awesome.
Like I'm not going to be like some other reporters that tweet out hot takes to begin with, and then they switch at five different times. Like, this week I'm telling you that the Royals aren't going to make it, but then they win five games. Oh, they're back.
So right.
I'm going to stick with my gut, but I'll be realistic at the same time.
Right on. I accept that. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it. Before Jeremy, I'm Alex Fuse. Have a great rest of your Friday and weekend, and we will be seeing you next week. Have a great rest of your day.